the Obama administration's budget proposal would also make big changes to energy. It would do away with many fossil fuel subsidies and boost clean energy research and development. But the proposal that's possibly raising the most eyebrows has to do with nuclear power. In his State of the Union address, the president called for a new generation of safe, clean nuclear power plants. Now he's putting some money behind that. The administration wants to triple the amount of loan guarantees for nuclear power construction, a total of $54 billion. Well, Peter Bradford is here to put that in some context for us. He's a former member of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission who now teaches at the Vermont Law School. Mr. Bradford, welcome to Living on Earth.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, break this $54 billion down for us. Where might this money go and what might it do?
Well, the nuclear industry at the moment is unable to finance construction of any new nuclear plants. Early in the Bush administration, the president announced strong support for new nuclear plants. Congress appropriated or passed legislation providing for tax credits to encourage new nuclear plants, and also several years ago provided $18 billion in loan guarantee authority. And for the nuclear industry, things just haven't worked out as intended. A number of companies came forward with applications for a total of 31 new plants at 19 different sites. They've all run into trouble of one kind or another. There have been cost overruns, cancellations, suspensions, delays. And in two cases, in Florida and in Texas, there have been scandals as well. So the nuclear renaissance has not been a great success to date. And in that context, it seems a little eccentric to be tripling down and saying, okay, if $18 billion in loan guarantees didn't do it, maybe 54 will.
Now, as I understand it, there was quite a bit of back and forth between the Congressional Budget Office and the Department of Energy over the shape of these loan guarantees and the size. And the CBO expressed a lot of concern about the risk of defaults. What did we learn there?
The CBO indicated several years ago now that they estimated the likelihood of default as being on the order of 50%. That is, half of the loan guarantees that were issued might result in default. And there's some history to support that. That is, half of all of the construction permits ever issued by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission resulted not in completed power plants but in cancellations. The U.S. has 104 operating plants, but the original number of construction permits issued was on the order of 230. And of course, in today's power markets, if you build half a nuclear plant but don't finish it, then you don't sell any kilowatt hours and you don't get any money back. It's not like the old days when you could go persuade a genial bunch of regulators to put it in the rate base and charge it to the customers anyway. So that's the basis for the CBO concern, and clearly is a real one.
In fact, I recall reading that in Florida, the utility there that's building a nuclear facility has had some trouble persuading the state to go along with the ratepayer increases.
The Florida story is a very interesting one because it is the first state in which the rate impacts of new nuclear power plants have actually shown up in the customers' bills. 8 or 9 years ago, when the talk of a nuclear renaissance first got started, it was based on relatively low estimates of the cost of a new nuclear plant. But as the actual time for groundbreaking has come closer, those cost estimates have doubled, tripled, and in some cases even quadrupled. Florida passed a law saying that the customers could be charged for the plants many years before the plants were actually scheduled to come online. And when those charges began showing up in the customer bills, there was quite a backlash. And the Public Service Commission recently denied almost all of the rate increases requested by both of the Florida utilities that are trying to build nuclear plants. And as a result, both of those utilities have announced that they're suspending the construction of those plants. that's an indication that customers, when they're actually confronted with the potential cost of these units, will balk at paying them. In addition, of course, with the economic downturn and the fact that the price of gas has fallen so much in the last year to 2 years, and the fact that energy efficiency and renewable energy continue to decline in price, the economic competitiveness of these units is very much in question.
So what's the likelihood, you think, that taxpayers would get these loans back?
The likelihood of at least some default seems very substantial, especially in a climate in which the costs of alternatives continue to fall. Because in today's power markets, you have to be able to sell the power at a price that's competitive with other sources. And it's very clear that the new nuclear units cost estimates are way above the current prices or even the estimated future prices in most power markets. So there is a real likelihood of default, and that's why Wall Street won't put the money into these plants and why the industry is saying that the taxpayers are going to have to take the risks.
So you don't think that the $54 billion in loan guarantees would be enough to shake loose the private investment from Wall Street?
Well, no. I mean, look, loan guarantees aren't a certificate of fiscal health any more than blood transfusions are a certificate of physical health. You resort to loan guarantees because the enterprise isn't healthy. And the problem with that scenario for nuclear power is that it's, in theory, a mature industry. It's been with us for 50 years. And even though there are some new designs at this point, it really shouldn't be needing this kind of help. The only thing that's going to persuade Wall Street or private investors to put money into nuclear plants without being assured that the taxpayers will pick up losses would be to have those plants built at competitive prices and to have them run well. And that's a scenario that will take quite a few years to play out. And the licensing and the construction will take, say, 8 to 10 years, and then a few years of successful operation. And so the difficulty with saying that nuclear power is an essential ingredient in the answer to climate change, at least anytime soon, there's no way to get these plants built without government assistance in the short run, and yet a scaling up to this in a way that would make any difference in the context of climate change does require a privately financed industry in terms of the way the U.S. works. So that's a 20, 25, 30-year scenario, and we need to make major reductions in much less time than that. That's why so many people feel that energy efficiency, renewable energy, reductions in other sectors like transportation, space heating, agricultural practices are a much more cost-effective and much more quickly responsive way to go about fighting climate change.
Now, the nuclear renaissance, as it's called, is kind of being marketed as an approach to dealing with climate change, that the baseload power from nuclear would give us far fewer carbon emissions. What do you think of nuclear power as a climate solution?
At least in today's energy markets, it's too expensive to be an effective climate solution. It's as if a homeowner with a leaky roof to their house decided that the solution was to put in a second furnace rather than fix the roof. It takes too much of the money that societies around the world are going to be able to spend fighting climate change and devotes it to a source that just can't respond quickly enough. The most defensible argument that can be made for what the Obama administration has just announced is that sometime 20, 25, 30 years out, we'll exhaust our ability to achieve greenhouse gas reductions through other means. And so we'll need to be able to resort to nuclear as well. And it makes sense to build some plants now to start us in that direction. To think that nuclear power is a good short-term response, to take the position, for example, that some senators have that we need to build 100 nuclear plants in the next 20 years is just ridiculous.
I take it from your comments so far, you don't think it's a good idea in the short view. But is this a good approach long term to looking to, say, a new generation of reactors many decades hence?
Well, what's a defensible approach is to back a limited number of plants in return for getting cap and trade, and then see how those plants perform. What's not a defensible approach is to take the position that, for example, Senators Alexander and McCain have, that they know that we need 100 new nuclear plants by the year 2030. I mean, for senators who in other contexts defend free markets with great vehemence, to say that they know exactly how many nuclear plants we need in 2030 is pretty breathtaking. I mean, that sounds more like the Central Committee of the Chinese Communist Party than one would expect in the U.S. Senate. What does make sense would be to put a cap-and-trade bill in place, use the 18.5 or 54 billion, whatever it turns out to be, to find out what new nuclear plants can do. But meanwhile, the cap-and-trade regime will establish a new energy marketplace in which we'll find out what it really costs to clean up the atmosphere of greenhouse gases, and we'll see whether nuclear really has a place. At today's prices and today's cost estimates for new nuclear, it's not going to be a winner, and that's why it seems so irresponsible to treat it as though the last 10 years, instead of being problematic and failure-ridden, had been a great success, and it should be anointed a winner and pushed ahead with artificial speed right away.
I want to talk about safety for a moment. You're in Vermont, as we're talking, and just recently, the Vermont Yankee Nuclear Power Station was the latest to report some safety problems. Operators there found some leaks of radioactive tritium. That plant's nearly 40 years old. A lot of critics say this points to safety issues, especially among the aging fleet of reactors that we have. I'm wondering, how might the loan guarantees affect the safety of the overall nuclear power fleet that we have? Might this new money hasten the retirement of old, more accident-prone reactors? Might it keep them limping along? What's the scenario here?
Well, there's no very direct connection because the cost of new nuclear plants is now estimated to be so high, that is 8 to 10 billion apiece, that even 54 billion in loan guarantees doesn't get you very many, say 6 or 7. And we have 104 plants, some of which have now reached 40 years, and many more of which will in the next decade. So the loan guarantees aren't going to provide the wherewithal to replace the older plants. Where there may be some interconnection, and it must be a source of great distress in the nuclear industry, is that at a time when the industry is trying to present an image of technical virtuosity and to indicate that the safety problems of Three Mile Island and Chernobyl are essentially things of the past, they'd certainly rather not have headlines about tritium leaks popping up here and there around the country. Now, in saying that, it's important to stress that the levels of tritium that have been found at Vermont Yankee and the other plants so far are not in and of themselves threats to the public safety or the public health, but they do undermine the image that the industry needs to have of knowing where its pipes are and knowing what condition they're in and basically being able to give a continuously good account of how things are under control. So in that sense, it's not helpful in terms of public confidence.
Would the loan guarantees help steer us toward different, safer technology for a new generation of reactors?
Well, I don't think there's any question that new plants will have some safety improvements in them compared to the older plants. But the loan guarantees in and of themselves aren't going to result in a significant degree of safety improvement. And again, it's because even the $54 billion in loan guarantees is only enough for six or seven new plants. And unless those plants prove out well enough that nuclear power can attract private capital, can show that it's a low-cost way of displacing greenhouse gases, there just aren't going to be enough new nuclear plants built to make a significant safety difference one way or the other. Furthermore, some of the issues associated with new nuclear, like its connection to the proliferation of nuclear weapons in other countries, are just not affected by loan guarantees. Those issues depend on a number of complicated issues having to do with international safeguards and foreign policy, and a limited loan guarantee just doesn't tell you very much about what's going to happen.
Now, the flip side to this announcement for new support for new reactors was a new approach to deal with the problem from the old reactors, and that is the waste. What do you think of this approach to coming up with a new plan for dealing with nuclear waste, this blue ribbon panel?
Well, of course, a panel isn't really a solution, is it? It's a step toward a solution. The wastes on a year-to-year-to-year basis are less of a concern, say, than reactor safety or nuclear proliferation because of the availability of interim storage. I just don't quite know what to make of this panel. It's not balanced in terms of the perspectives that exist within our society about nuclear energy and nuclear waste. It contains several people who are very enthusiastic about nuclear power and who over the years have been pretty willing to follow the industry's lead in any of the areas of importance. It contains some people who have long experience in public policy but very little having to do with nuclear energy. It does not contain people on the skeptical side who would be the equivalents of the nuclear enthusiasts. So it's a little like an airplane with one wing or maybe one and a quarter wings in terms of its balance. And at this point, I just don't know what to expect from it.
How big an obstacle is the lack of a good plan for dealing with the waste when it comes to trying to get people interested in putting up money for new nuclear power? I mean, I can imagine if I were a Wall Street investor, I might look out at that big $8 billion hole in the ground called Yucca Mountain and say, you guys got a problem with your business plan here.
I think that's right. It is certainly a problem when you for an applicant who wants to come into a community and say, we want to build another nuclear unit here or build a nuclear unit in a place that doesn't already have one, because if you can't tell the people in that neighborhood what's going to happen to the waste after the plants are closed, then it's pretty hard to convince them that this is a desirable neighbor. Some of the proposed plants are going to be at existing sites where the problem exists anyway. You know, it's not a barrier in the sense that the waste somehow become an immediate danger when the plant closes. They certainly can be stored and dealt with for a long period of time. And yet the image of more and more plants around the country storing their wastes for indefinite periods of time with no clear solution is a significant political impediment, even if it isn't, strictly speaking, a technical impediment. There's been an enthusiasm for the idea that you can somehow put the waste through a process called reprocessing and make the problem go away. And there's a myth that that's what the French do. In fact, there's no easy technical solution like that. The French do indeed reprocess their nuclear waste. But at the end of that process, all they've done is taken out some of the ingredients. They still have most of the wastes to dispose of, and they're no closer to a permanent waste solution than we are. And so this commission doesn't have an easy out in terms of any quick technical fix that it can embrace.
I'm wondering, do you consider yourself an opponent of nuclear power?
No, I consider – I mean, I served on the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. My name is at least figuratively on 20 or 25 nuclear licenses that were issued during my time on the commission. But I also chaired a couple of state utility commissions that were charged with making the most responsible and cost-effective decisions about their future power supply. What's concerning me here is that we're rushing to anoint new nuclear as a major part of the solution to climate change. And in the course of doing that, we're running up bills for the customers and the taxpayers that are hidden right now, but will emerge in future years in ways that will, on the one hand, cause a considerable amount of backlash and resentment, and on the other hand, have distracted a lot of revenue that could have gone to more effective climate change solutions more quickly.
But you don't think even this kind of eye-popping figure, $54 billion, is really going to trigger the so-called nuclear renaissance?
No, it really can't. I mean, again, loan guarantees are not a sign of robust fiscal health. They're a sign that the industry is in trouble and can't raise capital on its own. Even if all of these plants are built in ways essentially in conformity with their current cost estimates, they will come online needing to charge prices that are well above what current power markets would provide. So they won't present a profile that's attractive to investors in the future. I mean, it's as if you had a refining technology that if it exactly met all its budget estimates could produce $5 a gallon gasoline. And you went to Wall Street and said, this is something you ought to invest in. You just get blank stares. That's the same thing if you come in with 15 cent a kilowatt hour electricity when today's power markets are basically in the 3 to 4, 4.5 cent range.
Well, you know, Secretary Chu, the energy secretary, Stephen Chu, he's a pretty smart guy, a Nobel laureate. And he seems genuinely committed to me to solving climate change. Why do you think he chose to go this route?
Well, first look carefully at what he said, which is we're going to do this. That is the $54 billion. But then we expect the industry to be able to make it on its own. We're not going to keep on doing this, as some senators have advocated, and have the government underwrite 100 plants. So he's basically in the camp that's saying we're going to do this in order to see whether we can at long last get some pleasant surprises from this industry. And I think you have to see it also in the context of the bargaining that's going on over an effort to get cap-and-trade legislation. So I think his position needs to be seen as part of that bigger picture. I'll be terribly disappointed if, on the one hand, the administration doesn't get cap-and-trade legislation, and on the other hand, they're still pushing to expand the nuclear loan guarantee program. Now, that said, certainly Secretary Chu has said some things about the essential nature of nuclear power in combating climate change that seem to me to be too exuberant, too enthusiastic, and that make me realize again that his Nobel Prize was in physics and not in economics.
Well, let's talk politics for just a quick moment. There is that political element to this. I recall during the State of the Union address when the president said a new generation of safe, clean nuclear power, I saw Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina leap to his feet and applaud. And this is, clearly an enticement to get pro-nuclear Republicans to join on to some climate change effort, a cap-and-trade bill perhaps. Any evidence that that's going to work as a bargaining chip?
Well, what's troublesome so far is that the evidence really seems to be the other way, that with the possible exception of Senator Graham, the moderate Republicans whom the president will need in order to put a cap-and-trade bill into place are not moving toward him, even with the loan guarantees. I mean, essentially, Senator McCain says put this concession in his pocket and said he wants a lot more. It's not a great way to bargain, but that story is far from completed yet. We'll just have to see how it plays out over the next year.
Peter Bradford's a former member of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, now a teacher at the Vermont Law School. Thanks very much.
It's been a pleasure.